session number 22081, Wheel 1.
Mr. Gray, Reel 1. Right, Mr. Gray, could you tell me your full name and when and where you were born?
Alexander Gray. Born in West Wemyss, Scotland, Fife.
And what year was that?
1918.
And the day and the month?
26th of the 5th, 1918.
And what did your father do?
He was a coal miner.
And was that in a local colliery?
Yes.
And did you have any brothers and sisters?
Yes, I had one brother. He was 8 years older than me. He was in the colliery as well. Funny enough, I met him abroad. He was in the 56th Div, in a Cook.
Can you remember what regiment?
No, not really.
Now, what kind of place was this town where you were born?
Well, only just a little village. I'll say you're either a fisherman or a coal miner. Well, there was West Wemyss, Colton of Wemyss, and East Wemyss, you know, they were just all little villages in the local colliery. When I was 14, straight down the pit with my dad.
Now, what about the school that you went to? What was that?
That was the coal town of Wemyss school, it was, in the coal town. That was in between West Wemyss and East Wemyss. Fife.
And what were your favourite subjects?
Can't remember that, mate.
And what were your best subjects?
Well, I was pretty average in most things, actually, you know. Like when your schooling is different today, sort of thing, isn't it?
And now, you mentioned that it was either a coal miner or a fisherman.
That's right. That's what most of the people worked at, you know.
What about things like grammar school? Was there a local grammar school?
No, when I finished at the coal town of Wemyss, I think about 11 year old, we went to a higher school about 2 miles away, which they called East Wemyss. And we stopped there till I was 14. You could have, I think, stopped on and went to Buckhaven School, which is further on, and perhaps a bit longer, but, you know. Then I finished at 14 and went with my dad.
Did out of your classmates, did anybody stop on and go to the grammar school?
Not really. It was a very poor area, you know, really. I went to the soup kitchen when I was 8 years old, when the miners' strike was on, 26.
Could you talk a little bit about that, what you remember about the general strike?
Well, I say, I was 8 years old, and the strike was on. Of course, there was nothing. And with no food in the house, and they had this soup kitchen, and we had to go, the school children went and had their meals at school. We had a roll or something in the morning and a bowl of soup at tea time, and that was about it. And they were turning the tram cars over and all sorts of that thing. That lasted for about 6 months, I believe. And we used to go down the seashore, and with the coal was washed up, where they used to tip it over the sea, the bings and that, you know. And we used to go down and get a sack, and that's how we used to get the heating from, get a bag of sea coal.
Now, can you remember what your father's attitude was to the general strike? Did he support?
Not really. I mean, everybody was fed up. They'd got nothing, really, you know. There was no food in the house or nothing. And we used to have our food from the cooperative, you know. And of course it was all horse and cart jobs, and the baker would come round and the grocer would come down, and we used to have a book, and they would run up this book like, and they would pay it the weekend if they got any money, sort of thing, and that went on like that. It was a very funny old time, really. But we was at school, we went and ran at school and had the meals, and it was, you know, when
now,
a kid.
At the school, about how many, you know, looking at your class, about how many people in your class would have fathers that were miners?
Well, the majority of them, really, are miners or fishermen, like, you know, really. There was the odd one, perhaps, who worked on the buses, I'd one, you know. But they're not many, they're nearly all, they're either fishermen or, you know, around five.
So when you were moving forward to, you know, being 14 and leaving school, is that how you saw your career?
I knew where I was going when I left school, down the pits to earn the shilling for the family. Right? That's, you know, that's about all that was, right? Yeah. And we didn't know nothing else. So you weren't frightened to go down and sort of thing. I wouldn't, you know, that sort of thing. You just went down and that's
so
it.
What was your first job at the pit? What were you
at? The coal face with my dad. And I used to shovel the coal into the hold about the 10 hundredweight half one. And I used to push them out and turn them around and they would go up to the pit bottom sort of thing, you know. And that's what I done. I was with my dad all the time, really. Of course, then you gained more experience as it went on. I was an old man when I was 16, kind of always, you know, firing shots and all sorts down the pit, you know, because we got paid for what you'd done, really. You got paid so much, I think it was, we got 3 and 6 a ton for a ton of coal, and they used to give us so much a yard in, like, you know. And that's how we got paid.
Can you remember your first wage?
I was 18 shillings, but my dad paid me sort of thing, you know, because it was all amalgamated with my dad. But when I were about coming up to 16, in the winter time, the ships couldn't get in to take the coal away. Couldn't get in a little docks, you know, a little harbour. And they used to tip it on the pit head. And so if you was on the morning shift, and you come up, you can always do another 8 hours up top, you know, tipping it on, like. And used to get 8 shillings for that. But then, during summer, we would put all this back, shove it back. And I know the first time I went out, my dad said to me, he said, you'll kill yourself. It won't be no good tomorrow morning, like. And we had 3 and 4 pence a score for 20 of them tubs, you know, they hold half a ton. And I'd done 60, I had 10 bob, and I was chuffed to bits. And my dad went up the wall. But then I got to, we were wanting to shim and got the pictures and all this sort of thing, you know. And I think the most I'd done was 80 in the time, like, and that was 13 in Portsmouth, I think it was.
Now, you were working, you were in your first job. Did you feel well off?
Well, not really. Well, I was well off to the point which I got enough money to go to the pictures and buy a packet of fags, because I smoked when I was 14. You know, and, that was it, because I was done day shift, afternoon shift, and night shift sort of thing, you know, consecutive weeks.
So your entertainment would be
pictures. Mm-hmm. We've got a miners institute where we can go and play billiards or snooker. It was nearly all billiards then, you know, and that's how we spent the spare time, really. Never thought about going in pubs or anything, although my dad used to, you know, but we never used to, you know, I don't think I had a glass of beer, perhaps till I come down this part of the world.
What about gambling?
No, it's never, I'm a poor gambler, and yeah, I was lucky. During the war, when we used to come back to the 25 pounders, like, you know, for perhaps a breast for being 48 hours coming, and we used to play cards of perhaps half a dozen. And 9 times out of 10, I used to win, you know. And during the period abroad, I think I sent £60 home to my parents, £20 each time. You know, it was funny, actually.
But you didn't gamble before?
No. I'm a poor gambler. Don't like losing.
Now, you mentioned off the tape that you moved down south. Now, how old were you when that happened?
I'd be 19.
Mm. So you were working at the pit from 14 through to 19.
And I come down and come with my aunties and they said they'd get me a job. And I think my first job, being a miner, I got a job in a sand pit.
Shoveling
sand in the fresh air. You know. But it wasn't a lot of money, really. I think it was about 38 and 6 months a week or something, you know.
And where was that at?
In the village, this is
Heathen Reach.
Yeah, because all sand pit. It was all sand pits around here. Well, I had about 2 or 3 weeks there, or perhaps a couple of months, and then there was paying an extra bit of money at the tile works, so I moved into the tile works. You know,
where did you live when you moved down south? Did you live with your aunt?
Yeah, well, I lived with her for about perhaps a year and a half, 2 years, perhaps. A year and a half, I suppose it was. And in Linslade, I lived, you know. And he, our husband was a, he was a lorry driver sort of thing, you know. And that's how it went. And just before I got called up, I got a job, these pilings over the Dunstable Downs, you know, for like carry the cables, you know. I worked on that from Aylesbury to Luton, and I moved with a firm to Bedding Lane in Croydon and finished there. So I got called up from there, actually.
Mm-hmm. Well, we'll get to that. Now, you were born and raised in Scotland, you moved down to England. Did you have problems with the accent? Did they have problems?
They had problems with mine, yeah, definitely.
What do you remember about that?
Well, I mean, the wife, she couldn't understand me when I first met her, really. There's a lot of people who couldn't understand me at all.
I think you mentioned off the tape you had a story about going into a shop. And
oh, yeah, for a packet of caps and they give me a bar of chocolate. Yeah, that's the truth. That is.
Now, why did you move south? You know, what were the reasons behind it?
Well, I say, my brother come back and he said, you can get your living a lot easier down south. And I suppose that was the thoughts, because he said Leighton Buzzard, he meant London, you know, and it was cool, I can go to London, you know. And well, that was it.
Had you been out of the village before?
No. Normally, we used to go to Edinburgh sort of thing, you know, when Saturday night sort of thing, you know, when I was a kid, a youngster.
So how did, you know, the South East London, you know, we're in the kind of Greater London area, how did that strike you as a young teenager?
Well, I suppose it was all right. I made some good mates, so I think, man, I'm a pretty easy chap to get on with, you know. And what else? But I missed Scotland a lot, like, you know. If it wasn't for, I knew the wife before I, you know, went in the army, like. And I think if it wasn't for her, I should have went back to Scotland. I'd go back a lot. Up to this year, we used to go back every year with the car, you know. Have a look around.
Was the money better down here than what it was?
Yeah, well, it was easier. You was in the fresh air all the time. We're down the pits, I mean, you were in smoke and dust all the time, you know, down the mine. And I think that was the best thing about it, really. You know, you're getting the fresh air.
Now, we're into the kind of the middle 30s now. Did you have any kind of awareness of Adolf Hitler, the approach of war? When did that come
into your mind? I think that was about 1936, 1937, of course, when we first noticed that, but we didn't take a lot of notice of it, youngster, you know.
Now, obviously, there was a Spanish Civil War, and there was the International Brigade. Do you have any memories of that? Anybody that you might have known?
No, we're not still, well, the youngster, no, we still got to notice them things, really,
yeah,
don't.
Yeah. What about Oswald Mosley and like the
yeah, we used to read about him out marching through the London and all this business, yeah.
What do you think about him?
Well, you know, didn't bother me, actually, because I never got involved. So I looked after myself, that was the point of my... So.
Now, do you remember anything about the Munich agreement between Churchill and...
Well, so Chamberlain, they made a big fuss about him when he come back, you know, and, you know, there won't go be a war sort of thing, you know.
And what did you think about that at the time?
Well, not a great lot, really, you know. But, see, when they started calling people up then, I suppose everybody my age was the same. We wanted to be with the lads, like, you know. And I think that was as simple as that, really.
And what thoughts had you given to military service? I mean, you're still a civilian, you've got a job. What were you thinking about in terms of what arm of the service? Where would you have liked to have gone?
Well, I said, me and this other lad in the village here, we said we'd like to join the Navy, which I suppose that was some of the old fishermen in the family years ago coming back sort of thing, you know. Anyway, we went to we volunteered, like, you know, we went to St. Albans and had a medical. And this mate of mine, he failed the medical, but I told him that he could come back sort of thing. I said, well, if he's not going in, I'm not going either. And we come back, and that was just prior to, I think that must have been 39 or something, just ended 39 when we done that. Like. And then we were just calling up papers to, you know, report at Bedford. And
can you remember who that friend was?
Yeah, Joe, he just died, actually, in the village.
And what happened to him? and he didn't get into the Navy?
No, I think he went in the, I think he finished up in the beds and hearts later on, like, you know. He had a bit of fluid trouble, that was his trouble, you know.
Now, can you remember much about the process of how you had to register for call-up and military service? I mean, you mentioned the medical for the Navy.
Yeah.
What about the process of, before you went to Bedford, what actually happened?
Well, I think we just got reports to Bedford and we had a medical at Bedford.
Mm-hmm. Now, other veterans have talked about, thinking about joining the Territorial Army and getting like a choice of units.
Yeah.
Or volunteering, did that go through your mind?
No, it was one of the ones that went through my mind when we was going to join the Navy. After that, we didn't bother, you know.
So you just took potluck after
that's
that?
That's right, yeah. Mm-hmm. And then we got called up. I say I was working in Croydon when I got called up and straight to Bedford.
What did you think when you got this letter saying that you had to go to Bedford?
But no, just to, I knew quite a few of the lads here was going up there then.
Mm-hmm. And when was that?
1940, 15th of January.
Mm-hmm. So, war had already been declared at this point.
Yeah, they were in France then, because that's where we thought we was going, actually.
Mm-hmm. Just backtracking, can you remember the actual day war was declared, and what you were doing that day, and how you heard the news?
No, I was working in Croydon then. That was 1939, it was the war declared, wasn't it? And I got called up, I think it was the 21 group, or the 21 group, I think it was. Well, I just turned 21, that's right, yeah. I got called it then.
So what happened at Bedford?
Well, yeah, it was a bit, didn't like being told what to do to start with, like, you know, that was a bit, but we just mucked in and everybody was in the same boat. But we didn't have a lot of money. I think I had 14 bob a week, I think it was, you know. Nice couple of packets of bags and that was it, gone.
You're saying you didn't like being told what to do. Can you remember the first instance of being boarded about?
It was a job to get used to this, the drill business, and you know, some people, I don't know, it was funny actually, you know, really being, you were more or less threatened to do what you'd got to do, sort of thing, you know, or else you went in the guardhouse or something, you know. But after, I suppose, first 2 weeks on a square bashing, we were pretty fit, you know, and it wasn't too bad. Then we got a chance to go in the signals. I think it was in the signals of the MT, and I went in the signals. And
We'll get to that, but I just want to keep us on this early period. You've just arrived at Bedford, you're a civilian.
Yeah.
Could you just describe the barracks, what's the setup that they had, what your accommodation was? And
well, it was a huge place, really. Well, I think the barracks are still there, actually. But as soon as you went in the gate, like, there was people standing on guard there, and you got this flaming great square, you know, and that was it, foot bashing, you know, drills all the time. Like. And, you know, but we got used to it in the end. Now we used to be able to go out at night time and go down Bedford Town and listen to some of the jukeboxes or something, you know, like tea shops.
Now, can you remember much about your fellow recruits and who you were with at this stage?
Well, I can't remember, I don't know the faces, but I can't remember them much really, because I said we had 3 months on the square, but I got some good mates, but I can't really place them, actually. I've tried times like put up now.
What about the food in the army?
Well, you know, you got to have it, hadn't you, and that was it, sort of thing.
So you weren't impressed?
Well, we was always hungry at that age, weren't we? I mean, anything, you know. But when we went in civil billets while we were square bashing, the intakes used to come in every month. And I think it was after the first month that we went into, you know, the homes of civilians, you know, and we were looked after pretty well.
Can you remember that first billet?
Yeah, I can actually. And that was the first time that I'd ever seen Yorkshire pudding dished up in a plate. You know, just one lot, like, you know. I never forget a guy there. It was me and another chap from Watford in there. And this lady come and give us this plate, and I thought, this is all we're getting, you know. Of course, then they fetched the rest of the food after you'd had your proper Yorkshire work, they told me afterwards, you know. But they were pretty good to us. Well, then, when I think when we finished the basic training on the square, we went further over the Bedford and to these fresh billets where we was having the signal training, you know.
Mm-hmm.
We'll and get on in there.
Mm-hmm. We'll get on to the signal training. I just want to keep us on, you know, your initial training period. You've mentioned square bashing. Could you just talk us through a typical day during these first couple of weeks?
Well,
what you would be doing?
You know, I'd kick out of bed in the morning about 6 o'clock, going to Revalley with the mules, I think, you know. And then washed and cleaned up. I didn't shave much then. Maybe you checked every morning, you know. And then you went and had your food. Well, I'm not sure whether we had PT first before we went and had our breakfast, you know. And then, of course, we was out and prayed for every, well, all the time, really. Just square bashing, something, rallying and drill and, you know, with a rifle and all this business.
And
we kept fit.
How long was it before you actually got to fire the rifle?
Oh, about a fortnight, I should think. There was a rifle range at Bedford Way and they used to take us out there with the rifle.
Now, during this period, were you also trained on things like the Bren gun? And
yeah, where the Bren gun and the billets in the barracks, like, you know, and, like, you know, pulling it all to bits and all that business, sort of thing, you know. And then they took us on the range again. We was on the range about 3 or 4 times, perhaps more than that.
Did you take the rifle?
Yeah.
Were you a good shot?
Well, I was always pretty good, you know, not too bad at all, really.
What about your fellow recruits? Did they cope?
There were some pretty good and some weren't, but, you know, they were different. But it was not too bad. That was a change, actually, to go to the range. You know, really, it was something different. But in the barracks itself, we had 2-3 hours pulling it to bits and putting it back and all this business. Or the Bren carrier, yeah.
Now, you're from Scotland. What kind of mix of men were in your recruit squad? Were they all from the south, or were they?
Well, they were nearly all from this, Bedfordshire, Buckinghamshire. You know, most of them.
Yeah. Did you have any trouble with the fellow recruits?
Not really, no. I used to get on pretty well with most people.
Does anybody stand out from this period, either men that you were with or instructors? Anybody that made an impression on you?
I can't remember the names, actually. The sergeants, they were good, well, they were very disciplined sort of people, weren't they? But they were old sweats, like regulars, you know, took us on. Yeah, just marching up and down, shouting, you know, left turn and all this business. And then we got the biggest voice. They put you in line to more or less to get. You could have been on last quarter if you wanted to, sort of, you know, work your way up, like, really.
What about, the general issue of discipline in terms of, you know, presentation of kit and presentation of the barracks and so on? How did you deal with that?
Your kit had to be laid out every morning. Like, you know, that was inspected every morning, how you laid your bed and everything out, you know. You cleaned your boots and what, and you know, cleaned them with a toothbrush and all this business, you know, where they're all boning, the toe caps, yeah.
What did you think about that at the time?
Well, I thought it was dead all right, but you got used to it and you done it and you kept, well, everybody done it, and we had to do it, really, or else you was put on a charge or something, you know.
Was that common or was it uncommon to be put on a charge for?
Oh, no, there was quite a lot, no. But that was discipline, wasn't it?
In terms of, square bashing and so on, did you take to learn and drill? Was that something that...
Well, we got pretty clever at it, really. Yeah, very good at it.
And what about your fellow recruits? I mean, other veterans have talked about things like an awkward squad where they put men they couldn't.
Yeah, well, they sorted them out, like they put them, you know, they kept a squad. If there was any awkward, they put in another squad, like, you know, the harder sergeant major, perhaps, you know, so, yeah.
Now, at this stage, did you have much contact with officers?
No, not Bedford, really, not really.
So who would be the highest rank? Of
well, the officer used to come and inspect you, sort of thing, you know, in the barracks, you know, stand by your bed, sort of thing, when, you know, they'd come round, you know, be perhaps a second lieutenant or something, you know, and sergeant major, perhaps.
And had you been introduced to things like grenades and so all this was during this first 3 months
period.
What about things like route marches? Have you?
We've done quite a few at Bedford, yeah.
And
but what's about at Bedford, but they were a bit dodgy in the Durham.
So they got worse when you moved?
Well, we've done further miles, like, you know.
What about so-called field craft, where you'd go out and study
camouflage
the
camouflage and all that sort of
Did
thing?
Did you do
yeah.
that in
oh,
your
yeah,
basic
yeah,
training?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, we had a lot of camouflage business. And we used to do guard duty when we were there, when we was training. We'd done that 2 hours on and four off sort of thing. You know, if you were picked for it, you know, perhaps twice, perhaps three times a week. You know.
Did you have the so-called stick man?
Not really, no.
Where they choose the man that was best turned out and he wouldn't?
Well, like, Taffy was a good, well, always well turned out, you know. Taffy James, like, you know. It was quite a few of them. They were pretty smart, really. They've got a bit dedicated to it, you know.
So Jimmy James was actually with you at this stage?
Yeah, he was, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And he's one of the other men that has been interviewed for the One Museum Project.
Yeah.
Now, in terms of the what they were trying to teach you as a soldier, was there any emphasis on, you know, other veterans have talked about how some of the training in 39-40 was like geared towards the First World War, trenches and so on.
It was, yeah, really. Was
Could
it?
You describe any memories of that?
See, the relentless, like the bayonet trailing and all, you know, with the bayonets on the end of the rifle and, you know, punch bags and, you know, what I mean, you know, but,
What did you think of the bayonet training?
Well, it was something you had to do and you done it, really. You just done as you was told, wasn't you? And I think that's why you liked it or not, you used to do it. I was saying when that finished, we didn't, you know, it was 3 months there, and, you know.
Now, during this period, while you're in your basic training, the war was on, the so-called Forney War, you know, troops were in France. What do you think about what was actually going on?
Well,
the larger picture of the war.
The first billet we was in, her son was in France, and she used to get letters back, she used to tell us all about, you know, this land and here we had. Yeah. Well, I think most of us thought that's where we was going. You know.
And what did you? How did you imagine the war would be once you got to France?
I haven't got a clue. Not really. It didn't. You know, you couldn't think what was happening at all in the house.
Now, were you still a regular cinema goer? You still got the pictures?
If we got enough money.
And what do you think? Can you remember anything about the newsreels? Because obviously there'd be newsreels.
Yeah, we should see the newsreels. Yeah.
Pictures of the troops in France and so on.
Well, it was, you know, but it never used to sink in properly, not really. Not to use actually there yourself, something.
Now, you did your square bashing, you'd, you know, been trained on the rifle and so on. Did you feel you were a trained soldier after this initial period of basic training?
Well, I suppose we took it all for granted. That was it, and that was, you know, three months on the square, and that was, yeah.
Did you feel like a smarter person, or?
Oh, yeah. I think this discipline done you good, really, I think, you know. Although you didn't like it, it did really, yeah, I think it done you very good.